ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ गणानां त्वा गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनश्रृण्वन्नोतिभिः सीद श्रीमहागणाधिपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् आत्मस्वरूपबन्धुगण लटस्य दि नम्बर् 13 वेर्स् ओमित्येकाक्षरम् ब्रह्मा व्याहरन्मामनुस्मरन् यः प्रयातित्यजन् देहम् सयाति परमांगतिम्। सो एर्लियर वर्स टॉक्स ऑफ मेडिटेशन, सो धारणा, योग धारणा, द डिसिप्लिन ऑफ मेडिटेशन, सो दैट हेल्प्स अस टू गेट द कम्युनियन यूनाइटेड विद द वस्तु द रियालिटी, दैट इज कॉल्ड योगा। धारणा इज मेडिटेशन। So in meditation itself there are three levels as it is presented by Patanjali. So dharana, dhyana, samadhi. So all the three are meditation. In general, dharana is meditation. Therefore this meditation helps us to get united with the reality, with Ishvara. So to begin with, Ishvara is within. So like that you take Ishvara is everywhere. It is like Ishvara is in the temple. Do you take it like that or not? Why do you go to the temple? Because to have darshan of Ishvara. So, going to the temple to have the darshan of Ishvara, is it a contradiction in terms? No, it is not a contradiction. While knowing full well that Ishvara is all pervasive, still we will not be able to relate to Ishvara as all pervasive in the beginning, and hence we go to the temple and visit the shrine and relate to Ishvara. A similar thing is this meditation. So Ishvara is all pervasive, that is there. Therefore I close my eyes and try to relate to Ishvara in the heart. There is no contradiction between the two. Both are compatible only. So unless I relate to Ishvara in the heart, I will not be able to visualize Ishvara in the all. They are interrelated. So here we are talking of meditation. Especially when a person is about to leave this body, he has to relinquish the mortal frame in a meditative state. That way he has to leave the body. That is the topic. Tyajan deham. So prayati. This leaving the body is presented as a journey. You see, it is very unfortunate that we look at death as something horrible, something unacceptable. Like that we look at death. That is not the correct way of looking at life itself, because what we call life, it includes death in itself. So life and death are the processes of the same reality. Therefore you relate to one of them and you want to reject the other, that is not wisdom. Therefore death is as much a process of life as living is. So we understand it that way, and so the death should not be any more horrible. It should not look like that as something which should be avoided as far as possible, as much as possible. Then only when it becomes inevitable to avoid it, then grudgingly you go along with it, never accepting it. So that kind of an attitude which we develop towards death, it is very counterproductive. It will make our life itself miserable, because all the during the life we will be struggling to get so many things, and one more struggle is now added. It is the struggle to postpone death, if not avoid death. So one more struggle is created. This struggle makes our life itself very cumbersome, and we get encumbered that way. We should not do that mistake. We should understand that death is a part of life. In fact, along with the Shri Krishna, we should see death in living, in birth, and birth in death. We should see death in the event of birth, and birth in the event of death. That is how he looks at it. So, jatasya hi dhruvo mrityuhu. So, in jata, in birth, he sees mrityu. There is death. He sees death in the event called birth. And dhruvan janma mrutasya cha. Mrutasya, he is dying. And in that event, he sees birth. So, when you see birth in the event of death and vice versa, it is already an intimation of the immortality. So, that's why that immortality principle is very practically imparted to the students in this kind of a description. So, Shri Krishna, he describes death as a prayana. So, in fact, you see, people are horrified or aghast at the mention of the death. Whereas Shri Krishna, nayam hanti nahanyate, neither one kills nor the other gets killed. So he just poo-poos it. This killing and getting killed, he just poo-poos it. Can we call like that poo-pooing? Is it a good expression? So he just doesn't give much importance to it. In another place he says, hatvapisa iman lokan nahanti nanibadhyate. Like that he says. So these sentences, they sound very cruel and very hard-hearted kind of sentences they sound when we look at it from a particular sentimentality point of view. But here, when we are talking of the truth, so you should not expect the person to be sentimental. You should not mind when the person is harsh, because when our mind is not prepared for the truth sounds harsh. Anyway, therefore, Shri Krishna, he looks at death as a journey. In fact, in one place he says, don't grieve about the dead, better grieve about the living. Like that he says. So, to that extent he goes. Anyway, so death is nothing but a journey. But then there is a proper planning for the journey. The journey should be done in a planned way. You cannot do in a haphazard way. So here also, the journey should be done like this. When the physical body is relinquished here, so this is the way it has to be done. So the way I love this description of Shri Krishna, he says, when the person is about to die, this is how he has to die. How? He should not lie down like that anymore. He should get up. Can he do that? Yes, he can do that. That is called yoga. He can do that. But for that, you need an elaborate preparation of the mind and body. Body and mind, they go together. So ultimately, the mind wins. If the mind is trained properly, disciplined properly, then the body follows suit. Body won't hold back. Therefore, you see, I tell you how. One person was there. He was a great devotee of a Mahatma. And this devotee, he was very devoted to that Mahatma. And this man, he became a kind of paralytic or whatever, the devotee. And so he was lying on the bed in his village. This Mahatma is in a nearby town. So this Mahatma, what he did, he went to that village. And this devotee, he was already very sad that he could not visit the Mahatma, because he was visiting the Mahatma very frequently, once in a week earlier. But now, because of his paralytic stroke, he was bedridden and he could not visit the Mahatma for a long time, for a month or even more. And so he was feeling sad about it. But then he came to know that the Mahatma himself is visiting the village. So he was ecstatic, because now he has an opportunity to see the Mahatma, because he is now very close. So the Mahatma came to the village. he stayed in a particular place, some public hall or somewhere he stayed. And there is a river flowing by the side of the village. And so Mahatma goes every day to take bath in the river. And he lives in that place and he teaches a few things. Like that it was going on. This devotee, he was very anxious to see the Mahatma, but he never had an he cannot get up. And the Mahatma doesn't come and visit him. So he was very distressed. Then somebody told him, "Hey, Mahatmaji is going just like that to the river." So the Mahatma, while going to the river, this time he took a different path. And the path, already he is there in the village since the last 3-4 days. Now the path goes very close to the devotee's home. He was just walking like that. So the devotee, he wanted that the Mahatma will visit him and bless him. But the Mahatma did not come. He is going. Then somebody said, "Hey, he is going. He did not turn this side. He did not even look at this side." The devotee, he said, nothing, I will not accept the situation anymore. He got up and took a stick and started walking fast behind this Mahatma and met and touched his feet and told, "Why did you not visit me?" Then the Mahatma told, "You are visiting me, why should I visit? Come on, let us go." And so they went and took the bath in the river and came back. So this way, the mind will win. So if you apply this artificial rules that because he is bedridden and paralytic, this and that, therefore he cannot go and visit the Mahatma alone should come and visit him. If that kind of a rule you apply, then he would have remained bedridden. And so the Mahatma wanted him to get up and get rid of this feeling that I am bedridden like that. So, you see, what I am trying to say, there is a physical disability and then there is an emotional distress attached to that. If you can overcome the emotional distress part of it, then the physical disability could be very, very small thing, really speaking. So that kind of an attitude one should have. One should not be obsessed with the physical welfare, the welfare of the physical body. So the body is born to disintegrate. I care two hoots about it. So that kind of an attitude, one should rise above the body consciousness. In fact, we should live beyond the threshold of body consciousness most of the time. So that kind of an attitude, a kind of a ruggedness, a kind of a aloofness towards the welfare of the body is indeed necessary to imagine the situation. Here the situation, what Sri Krishna recommends is, at the time of death, I get up. I won't lie down on the bed. I just get up. And then what I do, I sit in a meditative posture. Even leave alone yogis and sadhakas, even some of the Hollywood heroes will do this kind of a thing. So the Hollywood guy is lying on the bed with all tubes and this and that. Then he sees his beloved in distress. In his mind he imagines. Then immediately he throws away all these tubes and walks out and jumps the window and goes and protects his beloved. It is like that. Even a Hollywood hero can do that. Why not a yogi? Why not you and me? Having prepared well, we can do that too. No, what will happen if I am hospitalized and bed and doctor says don't get up, what should I do? Then you don't get up, just lie down there only. That is not the way. So, I get up and sit like this. Because unless you sit like that, there is no question of yoga. That's why I sit like this. So, that is how he described in the earlier verse. That's why I am saying. Then, I inhale and chant Om. Inhale, chant Om. Omityekaksharam brahmavyaharan. Tyaja prayati tyajan deham. Everything is a shatru pratyaya there. So vyaharan, tyajan, prayati, they are all vartamana kala. Prayati is vartamana, present tense. Vyaharan is also present tense. Shatru pratyaya comes in the present tense. Vartamane, lakshana hetvoh kriyayaha vartamane, lati shatru shanachav. Like that some sutra is there. So vartamana lat only gets replaced by shatru pratyaya. So everything is in the present tense. So now I am dying, and I get up and sit and inhale and start chanting Om, Anusmaran. So Vyaharan, Anusmaran, Tyajan, Yati. That is the Vartamana situation. Therefore, I inhale and while exhaling, I chant Om. Murdhni Adhaya Atmanah Pranam. Like that what he said. Therefore, in the earlier verse, so the Pranashakti, which is a, whose grass form is the respiration, inhalation and exhalation. So that is invoked because now I am inhaling and exhaling the last time. I am going to this process of inhaling and exhaling, it will come to an end very soon. It's a matter of minutes that it will end. Therefore, I am inhaling and chanting Om. Om ityekaksharam. One syllable. That is enough. Because at that time or even earlier also, so all this one has to prepare earlier. That's why it is said, I will see it at that time, it won't work like that. You see, one elderly lady, she asked her son, daughter-in-law, Betty, prepare the roti. That is what she told. You prepare the chapati. At 10 o'clock in the morning, she told. Then this Betty, she is reading Femina or whatever. So she told, chapati? Why? What chapati you are talking about, Amma? What chapati? Lunch time is 12:30. It is 10 o'clock. So she stopped. She did not get up. And then it is 11:30 now. She is watching TV now. Some important TV serial she is watching. Then again, Betty, prepare the chapati. That is what the mother-in-law told. Then, 11:30, what is this hurry for lunch? Why should we hurry? Lunch is at 12:30. Mother-in-law told, I am not talking about lunch. I am talking about you are preparing the chapati. Get up and prepare the chapati now. Then she told, why now? There is so much time for lunch. I am seeing an important talk show or whatever. Therefore, so she sat. And now it is 12:20, and she got up. Now it is time for lunch, and went to prepare chapati. So she was in a hurry, and hurriedly she prepared chapati. So this chapati, one half of it is burnt to ashes, and the other half of it is uncooked. So that is the chapati. So similarly, when we do want to do meditation, etc., at the time of death, it will happen like that. Therefore, we have to do it much earlier. So now itself we have to prepare ourselves for that kind of a situation. That is the purpose of this discussion. Therefore, there is no point in postponing the whole thing to a later date when we are going to die. Because obviously, nobody is going to die now. That is the truth, really. entire universe you take, entire globe. So out of the 5 billion people that we have, how many are going to do and die now? None. Nobody is going to die now. And how many are going to die the next moment? Everybody. All people are going to die the next moment, and nobody is going to die now. The idea is, you act as if one should not be under the impression that all these things can be postponed, this and that. They have to be taken care of much earlier. That is the spirit of what I said. Therefore, so the meditation. If this is the way I like to die, I love to die like this. If that is how I look at it, then I have to make it a part of life now itself. So, this is how I do meditation. Continuously, day after day after day, I do like this, then eventually, at the time of death, the same thing will happen. Therefore, it is not something that we will do at the time of death. It has to be done much earlier. You see, one Sethji, one businessman, his business is in cotton bales. That is his business. Cotton bales he imports and purifies the cotton, cotton carding or whatever, and then prepares the yarn. That is his business. So this businessman, in Andhra Pradesh we have a town called Guntur, And so he was in this town, which is a cotton mills town. So this businessman, he has a lot of cotton business and all that, and he is about to die. And one or two Mahatmas came, message was sent, he is about to die, therefore come and help him with prayers and all that. So the Mahatma also went, and all the relatives will always be there, you know. Relatives will always be there. Even a poor man will have some relatives, what to speak of a rich man. Therefore, some relatives also came, and the Mahatma, they asked Mahatmaji, what should we do? The doctors told he's going to die anyway. So all the medicines, etc. were over. So the Mahatma told, chant Hare Rama, Hare Rama. You chant it. Rama Nama is going to save the person, you chant it. So they all chanted. The Mahatma was leading the prayer. And the Sethji was there on the bed. Very costly bed and all that. So very carpeted room and all that. So the relatives are chanting, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. The Sethji was just lying down with open eyes, just about to die. The Mahatmaji asked, are you thinking of Rama Nama, what we are saying? Are you thinking of it? No. Then what is it that you are thinking of at this time? What is it that you are thinking? Like that the Mahatma asked, you see, last week when I visited the factory, or when I saw the factory papers, he was seeing all the factory papers at his home only, so we have ordered a new consignment of cotton bales to come from Rangoon, and now whether they have come or not, so that is what I am thinking. That is what the Sethji told. So it happens like that. Therefore, so when you think of cotton bales whole life, and now at the time of death, all the people around are, whatever, God bless them, whatever they are thinking, at least they are saying Hare Rama, Hare Rama and all that. But this gentleman, he is not thinking of Hari or Rama. He is thinking, still thinking of cotton bales only. So this is how the worldliness, it overpowers us, it overwhelms us. Therefore it is necessary to purify the mind and to reduce the attachments to the things of the world much in advance. So that at the time of death, we just set aside all thoughts of the world. And we have only one thing in mind, that is Mam Anusmaran. So, Smaran means contemplating. Smaranam is always contemplation. You see, there is here he says Smaran, and if you look at the next verse, he says Smarati. So, Smarati. Smaran came from Smarati only. Smaran is the Shatru Pratyayanta for the Lat Smarati. Just the Lat Smarati, if you add Shatru Pratyaya, Sotti will go away and Shatru, in Shatru, that At will be there. So Shavarna will go, Ru also will go. So it becomes Smarat, and Prathama Ekavachanam is Smaran, that is the Shatru Pratyaya. Therefore, Smaran is same as Smarati. That's why he put Smarati also there. In this Smarati is a very interesting word. Smarati means not memorizing, not memory. That is not the word here. That is different. That context is different. Here Smarati is obviously meditating. That is what he is saying. It is talking about meditation. Therefore, it is not memory. What memory? Memory is not, memory means what? There is no freshness in that meditation. So it is not, memory should not intervene. Anyway, Smarati, if you look at it, that Sma, if you remove, what is it that has? Rati. Rati is love. Right? Then if you remove Ti, what is left? Smara, that is also love. Smara is the god of love. Rati is love. So Smarati means you remember, not remember, you contemplate with love. That is called Smarati. So, whom? Mom. It is like this. Our problem, what happens to us is, for us, even meditation becomes a struggle. You know why? Because our Rati is in the world. And our God is real. God is a Smara, the god of the worldly things. That's why, so spontaneously we are given to contemplating on the things of the world. And when we sit, now we sit for meditation. So in meditation, I have to contemplate upon Ishvara. Ishvara, Rama or Krishna or whatever. It could be a form or it could be a sound, whatever. It is related to Ishvara. Even when you say Om, that is Ishvara, it is the name of Ishvara. Omityekaksharam Brahma. So Ishvara I have to contemplate. But the problem is, there is no love for Ishvara. All love is for the worldly things. That's why meditation is a struggle. You see, what is a struggle and what is a spontaneous? So you try to do what you really do not love. That is a struggle. And what is a spontaneity? You are doing what you love to do. That is a spontaneity. Therefore, in meditation, it is a struggle. So meditation should never be a struggle. As long as meditation becomes a struggle, we don't make any progress. We have to befriend meditation. We have to learn to love meditation. We have to learn it. And one cannot learn it overnight. At the time of death, one cannot learn. At the time of death, they put Ganga Jalam in his mouth. The water of Ganga they bring. They put it in the mouth. At one time, the water of Ganga was very precious. It was not available anywhere. Because a lakh of people goes to Kashi. Going to Kashi, it used to take 3-4 months. And coming back, we're doubtful whether he will come back at all. So he comes back. And by the time he reaches his village, half of the water that he brought is already evaporated. So he carried that water. Very precious. Ganga Jalam is very precious. So somebody is dying, they go and ask him, "Sir, you give me 2-3 spoons of Ganga Jalam, he is dying." He says, "Okay, I will come." And he himself will bring it, very precious item. And he puts that spoon of Ganga Jalam in his mouth. And now, this Ganga Jalam, it goes to the mouth and comes to the throat, and then it will be pushed out. The throat doesn't allow it to go inside. These people think that if only he gulps Ganga Jalam, which means accepting Ganga Jalam, he gets sanctified and he will go to heaven. That is how all the people around, you see, all the people around, they want him to go to heaven. So they are accustomed to manipulating the life, and so they want to manipulate this also. So that he has to go to heaven. So they want him to go to heaven. So to go to heaven, he has to gulp the Ganga Jala. But he doesn't gulp, because the throat, now prana shakti is going, is udana is working, samana is not working, udana is what? Ut. So it is coming out. So this person, this Ganga Jalam is put in the mouth and he just throws it out. And the person who has invested 2 spoons of very precious Ganga Jala, he feels sad that he lost 2 spoons. But then people feel okay. They hope, you know, human mind is driven by hope. They hope that maybe a drop, half a drop must have gone inside. So what else they can do? That is how they feel. You see, we should not convert the occasion of death into such a pathetic scene. That is the idea. In the occasion of, and at the time of death, I take care of my Ganga Jala. I take care of my meditation. So that rati must, love must be there. Whole life we spend in love for the world, samsara prema. So, where from the prema for Ishvara will come? Therefore, we should practice devotion. Devotion means, bhakti means love for Ishvara is called bhakti. Love for Ishvara. So, love for samsara you don't call it bhakti. So, bhakti means love for Ishvara. Therefore, that one has to cultivate. That is the meaning of smarati. You contemplate upon Ishvara, and you love to contemplate upon Ishvara. That is called smarati. Because in smarati, it is a contemplation with love. Rati is there in it. Rati is love. It is contemplation with love. Ratipurvaka smaranam. So, that love won't come at the time of death. That has to be practiced the whole life. And so, we contemplate upon Ishvara. Now, this Omkara ఇట్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ బ్రహ్మ. బ్రహ్మ ఇజ్ ఈశ్వర, అనదర్ నేమ్ ఫర్ ఈశ్వర, వాట్ ఎవర్ నేమ్ యూ కాల్ ఇట్. సో యూ కాల్ ఇట్ గాడ్ ఆర్ రామ ఆర్ కృష్ణ ఆర్ బ్రహ్మ, యూ కాల్ ఇట్ సగుణ ఆర్ నిర్గుణ, వాట్ ఎవర్ యు ఆర్ రిఫరింగ్ టు ద సేమ్ రియాలిటీ, ఓన్లీ వన్ రియాలిటీ, ది ఆస్పెక్ట్స్ ఆర్ డిఫరెంట్. ఈవెన్ ఇఫ్ యూ కెన్ కాల్ ఇట్ ఆత్మన్ ఆల్సో, ద సేమ్ వస్తు. సో దట్ వస్తు, దిస్ రియాలిటీ, ఇట్ ఈజ్ ఓంకార. హియర్ దేర్ ఈజ్ ఎన్ ఐడెంటిఫికేషన్. యూసీ ది నామ, ఓం ఈజ్ ది నేమ్ నామ, అండ్ బ్రహ్మ ఈజ్ ది నేమ్డ్, నేమ్ అండ్ నేమ్డ్. సో సో ఓం ఇట్ ఈజ్ కాల్డ్ ఓం ఈజ్ ఆల్ డెసిగ్నేషన్ అభిధాన డెసిగ్నేషన్. ఓం ఈజ్ ది డెసిగ్నేషన్ ఆఫ్ వాట్? ఆఫ్ ఈశ్వర. సో దెన్ ఈశ్వర బికమ్స్ ది డెసిగ్నేటెడ్ డెసిగ్నేషన్ అండ్ ది డెసిగ్నేటెడ్ హియర్ యూ సీ సపోజ్ యూ లుక్ ఎట్ ది వరల్డ్ ఈ థింగ్ ఎన్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ ది వరల్డ్ ఇన్ ది కాంటెక్స్ట్ ఆఫ్ ది వరల్డ్ ఈ థింగ్ ది డెసిగ్నేటెడ్ అండ్ ది డెసిగ్నేషన్ ఆర్ ఆల్వేస్ డిఫరెంట్ లెట్ అస్ టేక్ ఇట్ లైక్ దాట్ జస్ట్ ఇన్ ఎ వే సో సపోజ్ ఐ సే ఖీర్ ఖీర్ యు నో ఖీర్ మీన్స్ పుడింగ్ సో పుడింగ్ ఆర్ పడింగ్ హౌ డూ యూ కాల్ ఇట్ పుడింగ్ ఓన్లీ ఓకే సో ఖీర్ నౌ ఖీర్ నేమ్ ఐఎమ్ సేయింగ్ డెసిగ్నేషన్ బట్ వెర్ ఈజ్ ఖీర్ వీ డోంట్ నో ఇట్ మే బి దేర్ ఇన్ ది కిచెన్ హోప్ఫుల్లీ అట్ 12:30 ఇట్ మే నాట్ బి దేర్ ఆల్సో వీ డోంట్ నో ఖీర్ ఇన్ఫ్యాక్ట్ యూ కెన్ సింగ్ ఎ సాంగ్ ఖీర్ ఖాయంగే ఖీర్ ఖాయంగే దట్ ఈస్ ది పల్లవి ఆఫ్ ది సాంగ్ పల్లవి యూనో ద మెయిన్ సెంటెన్స్ దట్ ఈస్ ది పల్లవి దెన్ ఇట్ హ్యాస్ వన్ చరణం అండ్ సెకండ్ చరణం థర్డ్ చరణం ఖీర్ ఖానేసే మజబూత్ హోతా హై ఖీర్ ఖానేసే దిల్ ఫూల్తా హై ఖీర్ ఖానేసే ఆనంద్ ఉభర్తా హై ఖీర్ ఖాయంగే ఖీర్ ఖాయంగే వన్ చరణం అండ్ పల్లవి దెన్ సెకండ్ చరణం అండ్ పల్లవి థర్డ్ చరణం అండ్ పల్లవి ఖీర్ అండ్ దిస్ సాంగ్ ఈజ్ ఎండింగ్ నౌ ఖీర్ స్లోలీ యూ హ్యావ్ టు ఎండ్ ఇట్ సో ఖీర్ ఖాయంగే ఖీర్ ఖాయంగే లైక్ దట్ వీ ఎండ్ ది సాంగ్ నౌ వాట్ హ్యాపెండ్ నథింగ్ హ్యాపెండ్ యూనో సో వెన్ ఇట్ కమ్స్ టు ది థింగ్స్ ఆఫ్ ది వరల్డ్ ఇట్ ఈజ్ ఆల్వేజ్ లైక్ దిస్ బిట్వీన్ డెసిగ్నేషన్ అండ్ ది డెసిగ్నేటెడ్ దెర్ ఈజ్ సో మచ్ డిస్టెన్స్ దేర్ ఫార్ ది వర్డ్ ఖీర్ ఈజ్ నాట్ ద థింగ్ ఖీర్ సో లైక్ దట్ బట్ వెన్ ఇట్ కమ్స్ టు పరమాత్మ ది హోల్ సిచ్యువేషన్ ఈజ్ ఎంటైర్లీ డిఫరెంట్ హియర్ ది డెసిగ్నేషన్ అండ్ ద డెసిగ్నేటెడ్ ఆర్ వన్ అండ్ ది సేమ్ జస్ట్ వన్ అండ్ ది సేమ్ దెర్ ఈజ్ నో డిఫరెన్స్ వాట్స్ ఎవర్ దట్స్ వై ఇన్ భాగవతం ఇట్ ఈస్ సెడ్ వెరీ బిగినింగ్ ఓన్లీ సద్యో హృద్ యవరుధ్యతే సద్య హృది అవరుధ్యతే ది మూమెంట్ యు టేక్ టు ది నేమ్ ఆఫ్ ఈశ్వర విత్ లవ్ దట్ ఈజ్ ఇంపార్టెంట్ స్మరతి విత్ లవ్ ది మూమెంట్ యు టేక్ టు ది నేమ్ ఆఫ్ ఈశ్వర ఆల్రెడీ ఈశ్వర ఈజ్ దేర్ ఇన్ యువర్ హార్ట్ ఈశ్వర గెట్స్ ఫిక్స్డ్ ఇన్ ది హార్ట్ హీఈ్ ఆల్రెడీ దేర్ ఇట్ ఈజ్ నాట్ లైక్ ఖీర్ యు థింక్ ఆఫ్ ఖీర్ యు బికమ్ సాడ్ Why you become sad? Because there is already water in the mouth and you realize that the kheer is not available to you. You are denied the kheer and therefore you become sad. And in fact one may say, in my life nothing worked in favor of me. Whenever I remember kheer I don't get it. So the other day they brought kheer. That day I was having fever and therefore I could not eat kheer. So for me in life it was always against me. So like I become even more sad. So when you think of the worldly things, number one, you don't become, you become sad and you don't get that object just by taking to the name and contemplating upon the object. This is how when we think of the world, we get bound by the world. We are bound by the world. And as we get bound by the world, we become sad, unhappy. So that is how it works. I tell you one secret. one knows world not by thinking about the world, not by contemplating about the world. One knows the world. What is world? If you want to really know, one knows the world by dissociating from the world. That is how you know the world. Therefore, you should not apply the same yardstick for the world and the Ishvara. So you associate yourself with the world, you will remain ignorant of the world, and the world will bind you and make you sad and insecure. On the other hand, when you dissociate from the world, you think about it. You don't accept somebody says, therefore I am accepting. That is not the way to listen to the Shastra. So don't take sides. So I don't want anybody to take my side. Why should anybody take, who am I? So you should not take sides. That is not Shravanam. So when you dissociate from the world, then you will see, my God, this is the world. You will be able to know it. You will be able to see it. Therefore, by associating, how do you associate? Through contemplation, through thinking, the nama. So you take to the name and think about it. This is how we get associated with the world and get bound. On the other hand, by dissociating, you come to know the reality of the world, the real thing of the world. This is the world. And on the other side, you see, you come to know Ishvara by identifying with Ishvara, by contemplating upon Ishvara, by taking to the name of Ishvara. Name in the sense, you take to the name in the sense you will be able to contemplate upon Ishvara. The name is there to help you to contemplate. It is an anchor. Name is an anchor. So as I say, Om Ekaksharam. Ekaksharam is recommended in a given situation for a given person. Because Ekakshara, that Omkara, it has all the mantras in it. It includes all the mantras in it. On the other hand, suppose the person is on the deathbed. Or why deathbed? He is absorbed in the meditation. Then he is saying a lengthy mantra. Some of the mantras are very lengthy. Suppose he is saying it. Then what happens? The absorption will not be there. If you hold on to the mantra with all the variety it has and correctly pronounce it, intonation, this and that. And if there is absorption, the mantra will not be pronounced entirely properly and with proper intonation, because that becomes a vikshepa. Therefore, you just reduce it to one syllable. That is Om Nirguna. If you don't want Nirguna, if you want Saguna, which is also valid, then you say Rama. So, in meditation I am saying, what I described doesn't apply to what is called Japa. This doesn't apply to Japa. I am talking of a meditation other than the Japa. So, here Omkara, it is really not Japa really. It is just an anchor which helps us to resolve the mind. It is the ego which takes the body into control and which keeps the body in a posture. And it is the ego, very sattvic ego, which makes the body erect and all that. And then once the Omkara is started, Om, like that, then now the ego will resolve. The body consciousness resolves. The mind with its entire baggage, it just resolves. And when the body consciousness resolves, when the mind also resolves, then there are two possibilities. One, you go into sleep, that is called manolaya. Or two, you go into the inner silence, where you are totally alert, there is total alertness, and full presence, and you are now in the being. So this being, which is your inner reality, which is the true self, that being is called Brahma. Why do you call the being Brahma? You see, the word is like that. The word Brahman means Sat. What is called Brahman. The word is like that. Then, so when you say pot, pot is also a kind of existence, a very limited existence. Something that exists in a limited way, in limited space and in limited time, with a particular form, that is the limited space. That is called pot. So what is the specialty of Brahman? Brahman is as much existence as pot is. That's why we say sarvam kalvidam Brahma. Because Brahman, the word Brahman means being. What kind of being? Spaceless, untimeless. That being. That is called Brahman. Therefore, the being which transcends the limitations of space and time is called Brahman. Now, the being which is spaceless and timeless, where do you get it? Where is it? Where is it? Suppose you say, this pot is, that is also being. But obviously, it is not spaceless and timeless. It is space-bound and time-bound. Suppose you have a form, Ishvara's form, and say, Ishvara is. That is also a being only. Ishvara also is a being. This is called Sadvada. Sadvidya it is called. Sat. Being. This is called ontology also. So, the Sadvada or Sadvidya. So, when you say Rama, a form, that is also the being only. But then, the being is now conditioned by a form. A very sacred form. It is sacred. The form is sacred. And saguna form of Ishvara and very good for bhakti and all that. I know all that. I am conscious of all that. But still, I am compelled to say that when you say Rama, a form, that is also the being, but that is you. It is a sense of being. When you say Rama is, it's a sense of being, but then that being is again conditioned by a form. That's why Rama is a form. Dasharatha Putraha Ramaha is a form. That's why Rama is limited in space and therefore limited in time also. Now Ramavatara has come and gone. Time bound it is. So that way the Ishvara, when you say outside Ishvara other than you, that Ishvara is also limited. Cannot be Brahman yet. It is saguna sakara Brahman. Everything is Brahman only, but conditioned and limited. Then where is this Brahman? Where? So, everywhere it is there. No, no, bhai, not like that. Everywhere Brahman only, everything is Brahman only, not like that. I want to know that Brahman intimately. I want to understand that Brahman deeply. That way, where can I do that? That is the point. It is like visiting the temple. Suppose somebody asks me, sir, I want to visit Balaji temple. Balaji, where is Balaji? So, in Tirupati he asks me. Then I told you, go up, catch a bus, go up and visit the Balaji. You have to say like that answer. Suppose you say, Balaji is all pervasive. Suppose that is what you say. Then that is true, but that doesn't answer his question. Right? Similarly, suppose I want to relate to that being in a very direct way. Not some indirect means. Directly I want to relate to that being. What kind of being? Unconditioned. Spaceless and timeless being. I want to relate. So what should I do? So it is like saying, so go up to the mountain and there you can have the darshan of Balaji. Like that you point out, that doesn't contradict the fact that Balaji is everywhere. Similarly, this question is answered like this. Close the eyes and sit in meditation posture and chant Om mentally. Inhale and chant Om. Even as you have to do it with love. Generally, when it comes to an object of the world, we invoke that love spontaneously. It comes out spontaneously. There is love. There is so much love.
really, I am saying something which is very real and very practical. There is love. Suppose I take out my credit card and hold it in hand. There is a sense of love. And then I use it and sign it and get the objects in a very colorful plastic bag. And I receive it. As I hold it, I have a sense of love, a sense of commitment, a sense of oneness. Somehow, a sense of unity. All this we experience. This is how we fall into the trap of samsara. So, but when I say, Om, it doesn't seem to be so loving, really speaking. There seems to be an enforced effort. I have to enforce it upon myself. That's why you need to practice it. So meditation should not become an enforced labor. So we have to discover that love. In fact, a stage should come when I sit in meditation, I am willing happily, enthusiastically to relinquish everything else. Dhyana is sannyasa. Meditation is sannyasa. People think that sannyasa means going to Hrishikesh and going through a particular ritual and then proclaiming to the world in a big hurry to proclaim to the world that I am this, I am that. So like that. That is okay. That is one kind of sannyasa. But that is not a nitya sannyasa. That is kadachitka sannyasa. Shri Krishna has divided sannyasa into two categories. Kadachitka sannyasa and nitya sannyasa. Kadachitka sannyasa means, Swamiji, when did you take to sannyasa? Okay, so-and-so date. On that date, I took to sannyasa. It is called kadachit, you know, kadachit on a particular date. So, kadachitka sannyasa. That means, that spirit of sannyasa, that spirit of renunciation was burning in my heart very strongly. In my heart it was burning very strongly that day. Then afterwards what happened? What happens to the fire? So, camp fire, you put the camp fire on, so go on feeding a fuel to it and it burns marvelously for an hour or two and then what happens? So that is what happened. That is called kadachitka sannyasa. Whereas nitya sannyasa, always a sannyasa. It is a mental state of vairagya, is called nitya sannyasa. Shri Krishna says, jnyayasya nitya sannyasi, yonadveshti nakankshati, nirdvandvohi mahabaho, something like that. So nitya sannyasi means, yonadveshti nakankshati. He neither desires, nor is he averse to. So, to the objects of the world. Nirdvandvaha, one who transcends the opposites of the world, he is the nitya sannyasi. So meditation is a sannyasa. What is the sannyasa here? So first I relinquish tyaga. Tyaga is a meditation. So it is I relinquish the society. Where is society? It is in my mind. I am thinking of the society. And therefore society is in the mind. Now I relinquish the society. Family. I have to relinquish family. So where is family? It is in my mind. Therefore I relinquish the family. Now surroundings. I am in the ashram, I am in the room, I am sitting on the mat or this and that. These are the surroundings. So where are the surroundings? Again in the mind. So I relinquish the surroundings. I relinquish the body. In the sense that I relinquish the body consciousness. The posture is meant for that only. Therefore, relinquishing body consciousness, posture is meant. Suppose you sit comfortably like this in a sofa. And now meditation. Close the eyes. Say Om. Om. Nothing happens. It doesn't take us anywhere. Therefore, you see, I tell you, if you sit in meditation, with an obsessive attachment for something, the meditation leads you nowhere. Similarly, when you sit in meditation with a strong ill will, so this ill will or dvesha is a most toxic irritant of the mind. And when you sit in meditation with that kind of an irritant in the mind, so again meditation leads you nowhere. Therefore, na dveshti na kankshati. Then only the sannyasa, the relinquishing becomes feasible. Therefore, I relinquish. Because what happens, even after relinquishing the body sense, body consciousness, still there is an inner world of the mind. The mind is there. The mind has all kinds of attachments and aversions. We cultivate like that. You see, this is a crisis of character in our lives. On one side, we want spirituality and we want to pursue the path of spirituality, but on the other side, we contradict ourselves day after day, again and again, and continuously undo all the good that we have accomplished, either through study or meditation, whatever. So this way, we contradict ourselves. This self-contradiction, contradicting oneself day after day, is a crisis in our lives. So as long as that crisis persists, the meditation is only a statement or a word. It doesn't work. It leads us nowhere. Therefore, we should overcome this crisis of character with integrity, with honesty. Whatever name you give to it, you call it Shraddha, or you call it intense faith or devotion, whatever name you give to it. We should overcome this crisis of character in our lives, and we should stop contradicting ourselves all the time. And so, then only meditation will take us anywhere. That's why sannyasa it is. Therefore, all dvesha and all kanksha, they are just relinquished. And now I abide in a state of mind which is totally attentive. Suppose I sit in meditation, I am very attentive, particularly attentive. Then suddenly I remembered my Secunderabad place, something is happening there, so many things are sitting there, and that has to come here and this has to go there, so I remember. Already attention is gone. So I have to draw back the mind, because mind loves to dwell upon those things. It has developed an attachment to those things. And so I have to draw back the mind and again put it on Omkara. Already struggle began. So this is how the kanksha and the dvesha, the attachments and aversions, they very badly interrupt the process of meditation. And so we have to relinquish all that. The entire mind has to resolve. The mind remains intact means what? The mind remains intact. The thinking processes are intact means what? It only means this much, that all your notions, ideas, your attachments, your desires, your fears, your insecurities, they are all alive and kicking. That is what it means. The entire noise of the mind is intact. What kind of meditation you are doing? You are just daydreaming. That is what it is. Daydreaming is not meditation. Therefore, the moment you chant Omkara, so the entire baggage of the mind, it resolves. And then, Mam Anusmaran. Anu, so as a consequence of this contemplation with love, so Mam, that Atma, which is Ishvara, it reflects gloriously. And in that state of mind, I have to practice it during my lifetime, so that when the body falls, the state of mind, that kind of a state of mind is readily invoked. and yah prayati tyajan deham, and I relinquish the body. You see, there is a verse in Kenopanishad. There, the relinquishing the body is used as a phrase, tyajan deham. So there the vakya is pretya. Asmal lokad amrutatvameti. That is the vakya. So last pada of the second verse. So first verse is keneshitam patati. The question, the answer begins with shrotrasya shrotram, etc. And immediately it is said, pretya asmal lokad amrutatvameti. Asmat lokat pretya. Loka is deha, body. From this body, pretya, having died, pretya means death, you know, preta, pretya, pra, ita, prayana, prayati, ya, yane, prayati, inugatau, pra, eti, praiti, and pra, itya, pretya. So, same thing, they're all one and the same. Therefore, asmal lokat pretya, having died to this body, amrutatvameti, he gains immortality. There, Bhashyakara, he has examined that statement. What do you mean by dying to this body? Dying to the body. So, you see, suppose the person identifies with the body here and dies. Did he die to the body? No, because he died to this body, immediately another body he has already assumed. There is no question of dying to the body. As long as I live in ignorance and identify with the body, there is no question of dying to the body. The dying to the body is possible only in wisdom. The wisdom is, I am not the body. So I rise above the body consciousness. That is what is called dying to the body. That is how he explained there. Pretya asmal lokat. It's not the death. It is just rising above the body consciousness. Amrutatvameti. One gains the immortality. So similarly, when you chant Omkara and die to the body, one has to die to the world. One has to die to the family. Oh, sorry, why I said it, I don't know. So, world is enough. One has to die to the body. One has to die to the mind with all its noise. One has to die and die and die. And then one comes alive to the reality. Sayati paramangatim. This is the journey. So, and Omkara is the name that successfully takes us in this journey to immortality. What we are going to gain is immortality, and what we are going to lose is nothing, only mithya. We are not really losing anything. We are not relinquishing anything worthwhile. Only mithya we are relinquishing. And so this is the journey of spirituality. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om Tatsat Shri Krishna.